Hello and welcome to another Directions Media podcast. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief. Last week, the Geospatial Information and Technology Association, GITA, announced the release of Spatial Infrastructures, the second white paper to be published in the Geospatial Dimensions of Critical Infrastructure Protection and Emergency Response white paper series, which will include at least six more white papers published in the spring of 2009. The paper comes at a critical time for the geospatial community as it attempts to get the attention of Congress to support better oversight of government geospatial initiatives, especially in light of the economic stimulus package being pushed through Congress by the Obama administration. The author, John Mahler, of Northrop Grumman, a former staff director of the Federal Geographic Data Committee, is joined by Bob Samborski, executive director of GITA, in this interview that will touch upon the challenges of addressing the very serious problem of the nation's critical infrastructure, its security, and how the geospatial community can come together to raise awareness in Congress and the broader information technology sector. Notice that you'll hear mention of a report issued by the American Society of Civil Engineers, ASCE, regarding their report card of the nation's infrastructure and a press conference that was also held this past week.
So, Bob, John, thanks for taking the time to speak with me today and to discuss a spatial data infrastructure white paper that was released by GITA this week. So in the white paper, you say that critical infrastructure accounts for quite a significant amount of the dollars spent by governments and business, and you gave an example that many sources estimate that China's current infrastructure expenditures are about $150 billion a year, or roughly 9% of its gross domestic product, and that the U.S. percentage is radically less than that and has been in decline for several years. Just how much do you expect is needed to correct some of the neglect of the U.S. Transportation or other infrastructure, for example, in the country?
As you'll recall, Joe, we featured Tom Murphy as the keynoter in our Seattle conference last year, ex-mayor of Pittsburgh and currently an advisor, a senior fellow, I believe, with the Urban Land Institute. And he referenced a lot of the ASCE's, what they call the infrastructure report card that was produced in 2005. They do this every 4 years. He also referenced the China's infrastructure expenditure percentage and compared it to ours and drew some fairly gloomy considerations and opinions from that figure and applied it to, you know, where we were going. Since then, which is only last year, it seems like a lot longer, the expenditures on infrastructure across the board have not increased. In fact, they've declined. And right now, what you're seeing with the stimulus bill in Congress is that the problem has actually gotten bigger. In an effort to stimulate conversation about this at the congressional level, ASCE rushed their 2009 report card. They were supposed to come out in March, and we were looking forward to it then and applying, you know, some of the updates to our 2009 conference in Tampa. But because of the congressional discussions on this, they issued it yesterday to a great deal of fanfare, press releases. Ed Rendell was the spokesperson for their televised press release and so on. The bottom line, to answer this question directly, is that they now estimate, after 5 years or 4 years of talking, that the price tag, the entire price tag for the entire infrastructure and range of infrastructure assets that they include in the report card has climbed from $1.6 trillion in 2005 to $2.2 trillion in 2009, an increase of $600 billion, if you average that out, we're declining at roughly an average slightly over $100 billion a year in terms of catching up. I think that's about the closest figure anybody's really got on that. But as we noted before, we expected it to get worse, and it certainly did.
Well, Bob, you brought it up about the initiatives that are going on before Congress. There have been a few initiatives out there. The letters sent by COGO, of which the GITA is a member of the Coalition of Geospatial Organizations, and then a few others by some private GIS corporations. I mean, is this going to get much attention among Congress, or what are your expectations for raising the visibility of geospatial technology and the infrastructure initiatives?
Well, compared to 4 years ago, I think there is, as you mentioned, a lot more activity going on, and I think everybody's got a better grip now on how big the problem is. Certainly, that's been the focus of GITA for the last year or so as we try to gain some awareness about the seriousness of this infrastructure situation. And it's translated into things like, you know, the COGO group, a wide variety of geospatial organizations and other stakeholders issuing calls for the use of geospatial technology to help solve some of these issues. I guess we're all coming down on the use of geospatial technologies as tools to help get the train on the tracks again, so to speak. And the purpose of the SDI paper that was just released is to bolster the argument that geospatial technologies will be useful in that regard and offer some specifics about why we need a spatial data infrastructure as part of the solution to these problems.
The emphasis, I think, of the infrastructure interdependencies focus that GITA is developing this white paper series around is that we shouldn't be looking at our different sectors in critical infrastructure independently, because there are a lot of synergies that we can probably gain. There are opportunities for doing things a little bit better, and geospatial and an understanding of where things are, the data requirements and things like that can help the overall process and help us make better decisions.
Well, that's a good way to transition to the next question I had, which was the definition that you presented in the paper and in this white paper of spatial data infrastructure as a dial tone. I think that's an interesting way to categorize, you know, what this would mean. I think intuitively we see that there's a huge benefit to all stakeholders like government and private companies, anywhere from GIS to EC firms, about, you know, having some basic understanding, some basic standards for an infrastructure, but it's a massive undertaking, and these constituents have to start from a common spatial data infrastructure platform. So what I'm kind of interested in is whose job is it to bring all of this together? Is it somebody like the OGC or the National Institute of Standards? What's your perspective on that?
That's a question, you know, as you're aware, Joe, is a subject of conversation for a number of years, and I don't think that it's really something as all-encompassing, as wide-reaching as national spatial data infrastructure is the job of completely of any one entity. I think, as you said, OGC has a role in it, in standards, Federal Geographic Data Committee, state and local organizations, private sector organizations. And one of the keys, I think, is first to have a baseline of standards that can guide the development and implementation of technologies, kind of a common architectural framework. And I think a lot of that is coming into being, you know, through the work that OGC has done, through work that the International Standards Committee, FGDC, other organizations, or other IT standards that really apply to building an infrastructure. I think, you know, the basic technical architecture capabilities are there, and the geospatial profile of the federal enterprise architecture provides a good framework for that part of it. The data side is really the key, because I think for NSDI to be successful, it needs to be data-centric. That is going to rely a lot on the data developers, and not just people who take data that already exists and package it into products. But I think to really make the NSDI successful, we need to have the data managed by the companies that build the infrastructure, the local government entities that build the infrastructure, the utilities, the different organizations that build it, so that then it can be available And, you know, I'll go back to my FTDC days and, you know, things like the framework data where you have a basic transportation network and you have other basic networks that are available and accessible and can be used and can be added to by other organizations, by data providers, you know, who further incorporate attributes and package the data for maybe easier use or better visualization capabilities by the users.
Well, yeah, since you brought that up about the road network, let me focus in on that. I mean, that's kind of a basic underpinning of the whole national infrastructure. But I guess I see competing interests here at work. I mean, we do have a lot of private firms like a Navtech maintaining and capturing data. Yeah, and I agree that a lot of this has to be data-centric, but the other parts of the competing interest are pieces like that which exist in the government. You know, the Census Bureau maintains some sort of a basic reference structure to the road network, as does now the open source community and things like OpenStreetMap. So who wins here? How do we bring these competing interests together?
Well, you know, if I could jump in here, one of the things about the 2009 report card that the ASCE added this time was some recommendations. And the first recommendation they had, basically, and it seems pretty obvious, is that one of the primary reasons for the decline over the last several years in our infrastructure in general was the lack of federal leadership on this. There's a variety of reasons for that. But if you look at some of the major, the most well-known and successful infrastructure efforts, big ones, like the highway system that we've undertaken over the years, complex projects, very expensive projects, they have one thing in common, and that was federal leadership, a vision. You know, where are we going to go? And we haven't had that. And hopefully what's being discussed before Congress now will start to put some parameters around that. We need a vision to which all the disparate stakeholders, some of which John mentioned, can contribute. And to sort of circle around and bring this back to say, an organization like COGO or individual organization like GITA, that's really what we're trying to do with the entire white paper series and our focus on the infrastructure from a geospatial perspective is to raise the profile at a national level, community by community and utility by utility, until everybody starts thinking geospatial and infrastructure problems synonymously. And I guess our immediate task is to try to translate that and focus it on a national level to contribute to the overall situation, to contribute to the vision that hopefully is now being put together at the top.
Well, in the letter by COGO to Congress, one of the things that was requested was better oversight because all of the oversight that existed was very dispersed. Do you see that the preferred way to go about this is to have a geospatial oversight landed in one particular committee, both on the Senate and the congressional side, like one, for example, like the Science and Technology Committee? Is that maybe the push that COGO is giving to Congress to do something like that and to host it in one particular subcommittee?
I think that was the general direction. There was no, I think, very specific suggestion, and I know that there's been a couple of, for example, now we have a chief technology officer in addition to a CIO or a chief geospatial officer within the DHS. But John, you're much more well-versed in that area, I think, than a lot of folks. Is there a specific suggestion?
I guess I don't have anything right now I'd want to characterize as a recommendation, but I'm not sure I'm ready to get into that. But throw, you know, some things out. You know, you had mentioned congressional oversight. You know, that is always difficult because there are federal agencies that are involved in the FTDC and in being leaders in developing and making geospatial information available and useful are under a whole variety of different committees. So maybe the Science and Technology Committee or some committee that could be a voice for this common vision might be a good idea. And then, you know, within the administrative leadership, you know, someone who can, at a high level, again, voice the vision and bring people together to play their respective roles in implementing it.
Yeah, Joe, I guess the thing right now where GITA is coming from, and again, there's some specificity that's lacking, is I think we all, every element of the geospatial industry at this point ought to be making as much noise as possible, and perhaps through individual efforts such as the white paper series and so on, and through collective efforts like COGO, eventually offer some specific recommendations to entities within the federal government that can act upon them. But I think we're in the noise-making part of the process right. Right now.
Yeah, right. Well, and that's a good segue into this next question, because I wanted to ask you about critical infrastructure and what comes first from the money in this stimulus package that the Obama administration is putting out there. I mean, do you feel that the protection of critical infrastructure comes first, or the revitalization of infrastructure, or maybe those are one and the same?
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't say it's one over the other. They probably do go hand in hand, but one thing that's obvious from the report from the American Society of Civil Engineers is that the infrastructure needs revitalization. And that I think is one of the key points. But I wouldn't want to say that you don't do the protection, because obvious, that is a key piece of it. And there's probably a lot of times when you can do them together. I mean, if you do it smartly, you look at, and again, this may be where geospatial can come into play. You look at the threats from hurricanes, from floods, from whatever natural events might be probable or might occur, as well as man-made threats. And then, where the local population, the communities can be served by better roads, better rail systems, whatever it may be. I think we can probably come up with some investments that will satisfy both objectives.
Yeah, in a way, it's kind of a chicken and egg thing, because if you don't have any infrastructure, then obviously there's less to protect. If you look at the expenditure, just sheer government expenditure over the last several years, there's been a lot of money and attention and talent and resources poured into protecting infrastructure. Whereas, as ASCE points out, in the last 4 years, the tab for revitalizing the infrastructure has expanded by $600 billion because we haven't invested anything. So just in terms of raw investment, it's probably time to start paying some attention to revitalizing. But on the other hand, it goes hand in hand. Once it's built, owned, operated, and maintained, the protection is a logical part of the infrastructure cycle. And from a geospatial perspective, we've always said that the way you respond to a natural disaster or a terrorist attack or routine daily damage to the infrastructure by, say, underground digging and not knowing where stuff is the same. You have to know where it is. You have to share data about it, and a lot of the procedures are the same. So once it's built, it's whether you're protecting it or whether you're revitalizing it, it's kind of a moot point, geospatially speaking, but it has to be built first. And there's more of, an economic impact of decaying infrastructure. To remain competitive on a global basis, we have to have the infrastructure to support our business and economic efforts and social systems and so on. And right now, that's a huge problem. Protecting what we've got is still a problem, obviously, but we've been at it for a while.
Yeah, let me transition to another hot topic in this whole debate, which is sustainable development and using green technology and different approaches. And I'm wondering if there's some competing interests here in this whole discussion of a space data infrastructure, one being safety, another one being population and economic growth. And I mean, where do you see that geospatial can play a role in this balancing act?
Sustainability, in many respects, is the quality of life in a community. It's how well you can get around. Are there jobs coming there? Is your environment one that's in good shape? And, there's always competing interests. And one of the things that I think the concepts of sustainability imply is that you look at these factors and you look at these competing interests, and you're going to have to make trade-offs. But you make ones that are going to hopefully enhance the overall quality of life for a community and keep that community functioning in a way that people are going to want to live there, and our kids and their kids are going to want to live there. And this is, again, where geospatial, in my mind, plays a big role. It can be used as a tool for integrating these different inputs. Again, because we use the GITA phrase, tell me if I get it right, Bob, everything is somewhere.
Perfect.
And, everything happens somewhere. And understanding that, and that's what geospatial as an integrating tool helps you do, can inform your decision process and help you make decisions that should lead to a higher degree of sustainability and livability within our communities.
Maybe one of the silver lining in the fact that we do have so much to do, the $2.2 trillion price tag that ASCE's put on getting the infrastructure just up to a good level, not a superior level, but just a good level. That's also an important thing. That's how far behind we are, is that as we do this, as we hopefully will do this quickly in the future as well as now, sustainability and a resiliency can be built in to the process. And as John just mentioned, geospatial technology has a huge role to play in that and can be a very useful tool in doing that, so that systems not only withstand current challenges but can also be resilient, and that ties into the protection of the infrastructure as well. So it's all part of the same thing. I'm not sure there's competing interests there if we do it correctly.
Well, one of the things that's being discussed quite a lot about the stimulus package is making sure that buildings, particularly government buildings, are brought up to be much more energy efficient than they are. And so, you know, you could extend the whole discussion of spatial data infrastructure to something like building information models. Does this begin to look too big of a problem, or is this exactly where geospatial is going to play the best role in all of this process?
I think it's big, but that's exactly where geospatial is going to play a key role. Some of the work that's going on in the OGC is coordinating and working with BIM, building information model, and building through standards a link between that information and what's been traditional information. So just take your example, a couple things that came to mind as you were talking. Now, if we're going to make our government buildings more environmentally friendly than they are, as well as safer, there are things that you need to know. You need to know the seismic dangers that may exist in that area. You need to know what the weather information is. So you're bringing information from up above, information from down below, as well as you need to know, the building footprint, the characteristics of the building that may already be there, so that you know how to do the renovations or the additions that are going to make that building maybe safer as well as more energy friendly and energy conscious.
Again, I think it's the visibility and the awareness of that fact that needs to be brought into this argument. I mean, it is a big problem. It's a huge problem. Maybe one of the biggest ones we've ever dealt with as a nation. And, we see geospatial up close and personal every day. We're kind of used to it. We know what the potential is. But not everybody does, and that's part of the reason GITA is engaged in what we're doing in terms of education and letting people know about it.
Yeah, I want to thank you for your time and discussing a little bit more about the SDI initiative. I think we're all looking towards the professional organizations like GITA to help us solve some of the monumental problems that are hitting us right now, particularly with the economic stimulus and how to sort that all out. So again, Bob and John, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today on another Directions Media podcast. If you'd like to write to us about today's interview, please do so in an email to editors@directionsmag.com. We'll see you again next time. and be sure to tell a friend.